My guest at this time is Louisiana Congressman and Dr. John Fleming. He represents his state's 4th Congressional District, and he's joined us many times at different stages in the health care debate. He joins us now to talk about what House Republicans are likely to do in the remaining months of this current Congress as a result of the Supreme Court's decision last Thursday, and what the priority list might look like if, in fact, things go their way in November as well. And, Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, Greg, thanks for having me. And as you know, ever since 2009, when this debate began, we Republicans have come very close either to keep this bill from passing, and then, of course, we recently missed it with the Supreme Court decision. So, really, we're up against our last opportunity with the upcoming election cycle, to do away with Obamacare for good.
Well, one of the things, of course, that House Republicans did immediately after taking the majority in the early part of last year is vote for a full repeal. That, of course, died in the Senate. I know that House Republicans are planning to take this up again, this idea, this repeal bill, at the start of next week. Obviously, the numbers in the Senate and the president's veto pen won't let it pass. So what message are you trying to send through that?
Well, what we're doing is reassuring Americans that there is a group of hopefully statesmen, members of Congress, who are ready and committed to vote the way they want, because we know Americans, as much as by 2-1, want this awful law repealed. And so what we're doing is reinstating in their mind that we have not wavered in any way, that we will go forward at every opportunity, at every juncture, to repeal Obamacare, lock, stock, and barrel, pull it out by its roots and end it forever. And even if given opportunity short of that, we will defund it and have made numerous attempts in the past to do that. But as you say, without the Senate taking it up, without having a president willing to sign it, that it'll be, of course, ultimately it's not going to stop it. So we're just reassuring Americans that we're prepared to do that, and if they're willing to make some changes in November, put people in Washington, in the Senate, and in the White House who will go along with us in the repeal effort, that we can get it done.
So basically it boils down to now that the repeal effort with a divided Congress and a Democratic president hasn't worked. The Supreme Court decided to uphold it 5-4, that if on the one hand, if President Obama gets reelected or the Democrats keep the Senate, this idea of stopping Obamacare is pretty much over. However, if Mitt Romney wins and Republicans take both houses of Congress, you feel pretty good that it will be repealed?
I do. You know, the problem with Obamacare is it's a very highly structured bureaucratic system, very expensive, changes the relationship between you and your doctor and you and your insurance company, you and the healthcare system in general, and micromanages your daily life and requires you to look to government to make your day-to-day healthcare and really living decisions. And it won't be fully implemented until 2014. So we have a window of opportunity to, in effect, kill the baby while it's still in the cradle. Once it gets grown, once it begins to take root, once it becomes just another giant entitlement program, it'll be very difficult to dismantle, and again, it'll ultimately lead to really a two-tier healthcare system where those who are well off, those who are wealthy, can opt into a private system which will emerge to the side just as it has in Great Britain and Canada, or you're stuck as someone in the middle class or below in a healthcare system run solely by the government where your choices are reduced, and certainly where your access to health care will be limited. Because remember, just because, Greg, you have a card that entitles you to coverage, it does not mean you have access to care.
We're talking with Louisiana doctor and Congressman John Fleming. And Congressman, one of the things that conservatives saw as a possible silver lining from Chief Justice Roberts' decision last Thursday was that he only let it stand constitutionally as a tax, which is leading conservatives to say, well, that means it only takes 51 votes to repeal this in the Senate. It can't be filibustered because that's the way the rules work when it comes to tax legislation. Is that a major silver lining for you?
Well, naturally, I would have preferred that the entire bill had been taken down and we start over and work on a step-by-step bipartisan process. which is the way it should have been done in the beginning. But certainly that is a silver lining, that if this really becomes a giant tax, and it is, it's a giant tax on the middle class, then that means that reconciliation in the Senate is an opportunity to repeal it, which would require only 50+1 votes in order to accomplish that. And that's not nearly as high of a bar as it would be a filibuster-proof 60 majority in the Senate. The key here, again, is the White House. Ultimately, whatever we do, it's got to be signed by the president. And I just would say to all of your listeners that never in history has there been a clearer choice between two visions of America. We're at a crossroads. Either a larger government that will incrementally take over your life and take money out of your bank account, literally, through the IRS, or a smaller, limited government that gives you options and allows jobs and the economy to grow. It's really up to the American people now. The Supreme Court is not going to be our backstop.
One of the things that, of course, has happened since then is that despite the tax being the rationale for keeping the mandate in place, the White House and most Democrats have continued to insist that it is not a tax. So apart from the law and the merits of the case, what do you make of the pure politics of the aftermath of this decision?
Well, there's no question that had they run on this bill back in 2009, 2010, as being what it really is, which is the largest middle-class tax increase in American history, with 21 different taxes, not just the individual mandate tax, and not counting the expiration of the Bush tax rates, had they run on all of those tax increases, it would have never passed. The Claire McCaskills of the world, the Mary Landrews of the world could not have supported the bill, could not have voted for it. Remember, all it took was one senator, just one senator, to decline, who was a Democrat, to decline to vote for it, and it all would have fallen apart. So, again, we're going to have to come back to reality here. The Democrats, the president, is going to have to admit the obvious and what the Supreme Court has told us, and that is that this is a giant middle-class tax.
Congressman, we'll certainly be watching the debate as it goes forward next week, as well as, of course, what happens come Election Day and what it will mean for this law. Thank you very much, as always, for your time, sir.
Greg, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, my friend.
Same here. Happy 4th.
Thank you. You as well.
Louisiana Congressman John Fleming, longtime doctor. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.